Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
Welcome to 3 Yards Per Carry, a podcast covering the Miami Dolphins and the NFL. Now, here's your hosts, Chris, Alf, and Simon.
And we're on, and welcome to a post-draft edition of 3 Yards Per Carry. I'm Alfredo Arteaga, Simon Clancy is here, Chris Kaufman is here. And as always, this show is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, back in the state of Florida, use the promo code 5, F-I-V-E. You deposit $100, you get $100. Play the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, play it all. Play the futures on the NFL. Play it all on Prize Picks. Use promo code 5, F-I-V-E. And BetterEdge.com, you can go to BetterEdge.com/5 reasons. You get $20 just for signing up. Well, draft season is finally over, guys. And depending on who you talk to, Dolphins either did really, really well. I think we're all going to be in agreement on a pick here that we're going to do in the first half of the show. But we're going to do day one and day two in the first half of the show. The second half of the show, we're going to do day three. So two picks, day one and two, five and day three. We'll start with Chop Robinson. It gets to 21, and my whole reasoning, and we did our own shows, and we saw how we ranked our edge players. I never like taking the fourth guy, the fourth best guy, but that's my board. My board doesn't matter. And that's what people on Twitter have to understand and get over themselves a little bit. We don't matter. What matters is what the team thinks. I don't know that Chop Robinson was fourth on their edge board. He was on mine, and I never like taking the fourth best guy out of position in the first round at 21. So they took Chop Robinson. I would have gone in a different direction, but I can't argue with the selection in the sense that it's a position of need. It's a position I would have taken had two other guys been on there. So it makes perfect sense. If they had Chop Robinson higher on their board, they would have taken Chop Robinson instead of a Jared Verse or Leatu Latu, who I would have absolutely taken if they were available at 21. They take Chop Robinson at 21. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, I'm in complete agreement with you, Alf. To an absolute T, I think they probably got the rough end of the stick in terms of the guys that they wanted. You know, you kind of feel like they missed out at 21, especially with the picks at 19 and 20, but actually you can't kind of argue with what they did. I mean, I didn't love the pick, and I would have gone in a different direction. But you can't argue with the traits and with the athletic upside, which is phenomenal, and just the overall upside, which is phenomenal. You know, yeah, this is like a, you know, I said it in the draft book, this has got, you know, turn on the tape, this is like a, you know, a souped up Ferrari at the traffic lights waiting for the green to go. And, you know, you can almost see, you know, the gas dripping from the tailpipe in anticipation before he goes. He's so twitched up. When that light does change, you know, he explodes, he bursts, and he's bendy and he's violent and he flattens. And yeah, I mean, it's a position of need, and, you know, I didn't love him on tape, I have to say. I thought he was a little bit polarizing in terms of his delivery, what he delivered, and the tape was up and down. But, you know, the get off is next level. Sack production, ball production is low for me. And I think he can be a liability at times against the run. But he can get home as a pass rusher, and that's what you're looking for in the NFL. My concern always was, and my concern remains, that with those first two picks, you had to have legitimate day one starters for me. He won't start, I don't think, for multitude of reasons. And that's the disappointment I have with the overall draft, is that, you know, this window is now, and they picked, you know, a sub-package pass rusher and an experimental tackle who isn't going to contribute at all. And that's the concern for me, Chris. And, you know, I know you love Robinson, and look, I don't dislike the pick at all. I think he's a good player. He's obviously a good player. for me, I probably would have gone elsewhere, but you know, you can't argue with what they did.
Chris?
Yeah, I think that I'm probably the local cheerleader for Chop Robinson. So I'll definitely stand up for the pick on this. I think that I usually won't say things like this unless I have it fairly authoritatively, but I have been told that yes, indeed, Chop Robinson would have been the pick even over a Jared Verse or a Leiatu Latu. Believe that if you will, but there are schematic reasons for that. And that's stuff that has started, that has been starting to come in, starting to be impressed upon me, that maybe we weren't thinking about beforehand. Maybe we weren't thinking about on draft night. But, you know, Chop Robinson himself was talking about how the defense, you know, he said his quote, I believe, was something along the lines of, the defense Weaver plans to use is the same we use at Penn State, putting me at nose, putting me on the edge. Manny Diaz, you know, has that Rex Ryan influence, which is similar with Anthony Weaver. I think Chop said, you know, his input from Weaver is that Weaver has had his eye on him for a while. And so I think that the indications are that, quite aside from how you would have ranked the 1 through 4, there's a schematic fit going on here that, you know, might be underplayed. And I think that that is a very, you know, that is a big reason, in addition to, you know, fairly clean medicals, young player, obviously good upside with his explosiveness and athletic ability, you know, all those things. I think that there's a schematic thing that's being a little underplayed. I think that from a personality standpoint, you know, people talk up this guy a lot. I was watching the broadcast, and Desmond Howard gets up there and he starts talking about how, you know, this is the lady who did the drug test. This is her favorite player. The lady who sits at the front desk at Exos training facility where he goes and works out, this is her favorite player. Just because of the personality and, you know, the charisma and how likable he is. You look at his body and you look at his testing results and you can see that he puts in the work. And I think that overall, that's one of the reasons that I compare him to a Cameron Wake or a Brandon Graham, is because it's not just the explosiveness. It's not just the pass rush prowess. It's the commitment level and the way that he works. I think the schematic fit is a big deal here. They're going to use him in the middle. I was listening to, you know, like Ollie Connolly is somebody that I think we're all fans of. And he was talking about the fit with Chop Robinson to the Miami Dolphins. And it's funny because at first he got it all wrong. He spent like a minute or two absolutely shitting all over the pick because, you know, he made a mistake. He thought that Vic Fangio was still here. He had 2 hours of sleep. And he's like, you know, man, I really wish he would have gone, though, to like a Seattle defense or a Baltimore defense, you know, one of those defenses that would get the most out of him. And then he realized his mistake. He's like, you know, oh, man, disregard everything I just said. This is the perfect fit. I'm hyped for it. This is the ideal fit. And the reason that he said that is because, you know, he's not just going to be an edge guy. He's not just going to be swooping, you know, a swooper, running the arc and bending at the top of his arc and getting back to the quarterback. He's not going to just be that in Miami. He's also going to be used, like Chop himself said, that Weaver told him, which is that he's going to be used over the nose. He's going to be used on inside players. And with guys like that, what you do, you stick a guy as explosive as Chop Robinson in the middle, because that first step scares the bejesus out of an offensive line. And it really causes a whole lot of disruption to the protection scheme. And that's how you pop guys unblocked, you know, on a blitz or, you know, a different player along the defensive front. pops free to the quarterback. And so he can be very disruptive that way. But it all keys off of his explosiveness. You know, his explosiveness kind of sets the board for the rest of the pass rush. And that's what the Dolphins are going to be looking at, is a player who, yeah, he can get his own as far as his pressures, disruption. I mean, he had one of the best pass rush win rates in college football. Basically, his pass rush win rate was up there with anybody not named Nick Bosa over the last number of years. And so, you know, he can get all that, but also he's going to free things up for his teammates. And that's what he did at Penn State. I think that this is an explosive player. This is an A-plus pick to me. This was my edge number two in the draft. I did have Leiatu Latu number one just because of his overall polish level. But this was my number two, and the Dolphins got him at 21 overall. He played all of 2023 at like 20 years old. He played, you know, he broke out in 2022 as a 19-year-old. He was playing overhang positions for Maryland at 18 years old, you know, as like a strong side, as a Sam linebacker, basically. You know, this is a guy that has tremendous upside potential, but also is a very, very, very good football player right now. The question is he going to be able to play the run very well? I think that he has technique. It's not the technique that some people like. He is more, I mean, I could just say it. The scouts said it the best. He said that, you know, one scout said that and told Bob McGinn he must be an ambidextrous kid. I'm telling you don't find that. He's got a burst off the edge that's rare. This is one of the few players that you will ever see that can slip and dip and make the L move at the proper angle and depth to the quarterback. And he can do it from the left or right sides. And he can play the run. He's not a hit and shed guy. He's an escape guy. He runs off of blocks. He doesn't defeat blocks, but he's so quick and athletic, he doesn't have to beat on him. And I think that this was something that was echoed really by Greg Cosell when he talked about, you know, he broke down the strengths and weaknesses of Chop Robinson as a player. And he echoed the same sentiments, that he showed some refinement and nuance as a run defender, turning his body and getting skinny to prevent blocks. I think there's something there for run defense. I'm not going to say that he's going to be only a pass rush downs guy. I think when everyone is healthy, when Bradley Chubb is healthy, and when Jalen Phillips is healthy, and Shaq Barrett is healthy, then you're going to see him more on the pass rush downs. But early on, if Bradley Chubb is on a reserve list, and Jalen Phillips, let's say he's on a reserve list too, then your pass rushers, your edge players are Shaq Barrett and Chop Robinson and Muhammad Kamara. And I will be goddamned if Chop Robinson is only going to be a third down sub rusher in that context with Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips not playing. No, he's going to be playing every down. And that's just reality. But when everybody is healthy, and especially as a younger player, I think that is true. I think that he is a little bit more of a pass rush sub guy. But the beauty there is that he can be used a number of different ways as a pass rush sub guy, if that makes sense, you know? So, mm-hmm. Initially as a rookie, rookies come along at the speed they come along. When everybody's healthy, yes, I do agree there, but the Dolphins are not in that boat. That's not the position they're in. Everybody isn't going to be healthy to start the year. Everybody isn't going to be healthy in week one. He is going to play always in week one if those guys are not there.
Yeah, and I also, you know, hold out hope a little bit that Jalen Phillips, I've always liked him rushing as a three tech. There was some evidence at the University of Miami that he was very successful rushing as a three tech. He had some successful rushes as a rookie as a three tech. I believe he had three sacks in his second year coming out of three tech. So there's a distinct possibility that you could play all of these pass rushers together. Maybe not all of them, but Chop Robinson with Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips can absolutely be on the field together. on third downs. Like, that's a possibility. Like, they could find a way to play these guys. Doesn't mean that Chop Robinson has to be on the bench.
Multiple. Yeah. I don't know about Kamara when everybody's healthy, you know?
Yeah. No, Kamara's the only one that I think would be left out. You can't play six of them.
Yeah.
You know? Right. You know? But Simon, yeah. And I think we could wrap up Chop right here. You could see how his speed element could help guys on the inside like Zach Sealer and possibly Phillips rushing, or possibly even Jordan Brooks on blitzes. Like, his speed element is going to occupy a tackle no matter what. They can't use a tight end on him, even as a rookie.
Sure. I mean, I would run at him every down if he's playing as a starter to begin with. But yeah, of course. I mean, his speed is absolutely legit. And as we talked about in the previous shows, it's, you know, he's got some serious juice off the edge. And, I think it'll be interesting. I would not be surprised if Kamara got more snaps on first and second down than Robinson did in the early portion of his career. I think Kamara's a significantly better run player. But it will be interesting to see what Robinson is able to do for everybody else, because that speed is electric.
All right. And we're going to move on to the second round. Maybe we don't want to, but we're going to finish up the first part of this show by moving on to the second round.
Well, you know what, Alf, I've got a proposition for you.
Okay.
Since we do have this conundrum, we're about to talk about a player we don't want to talk about.
But we have to talk about him. He is Miami Dolphin.
Can we talk about Jalen Wright on this episode? Because we did technically use a day two pick on him.
Oh, you want to talk about Jalen Wright in the first half of the show? We could do that. But
Simon, are you up for that?
Sure.
So that way it's not all negative. It leaves
the pain of what
half.
We're about to do.
By the way, I like what the Dolphins did much better than what I did. If you remember our preview show, I was advocating trading a third round pick to get a fourth round pick to take Muhammad Kamara. They took Mo Kamara anyway and still got Jalen Wright. So I think what they did was much better than what I was proposing to do. But pick 55 came around and the Dolphins take Patrick Paul, offensive tackle, Houston, almost guaranteed to be future left tackle in training, redshirt year. Obviously, I don't think he's going to play. Here's my issue, okay? And then you guys could have at it. His problems in pass pro are well documented. I think his biggest issues right away is his issues in the run game. Usually in pass pro, and I talked about this on OnlyFans, and if you want to become a member on OnlyFans, you can go to discord.gg/OnlyFans. You become a member there for $3 a month. I forgot to say that at the top of the show. But I was talking about this earlier on OnlyFans. Yeah, his pass pro, yeah, that's all well documented. But usually in pass pro, you want to get bigger. But in the run game, you want to get smaller. You want to hit aim points, especially in this system, where you want to get on the right shoulder, especially in outside zone or maybe even an inside zone. He has issues with that. And I think the problem is he, for whatever reason, he lets his hands out so wide and in the run game ends up hugging and hooking inside, which is a massive red flag for referees. They're going to see those hands out there in the run game, and it's just going to look like he's tackling people when he makes contact. Because, first of all, it's pretty hard to make contact when you lumber off the line and you can't find the aim point because you take the wrong angle and you drop your head, because he does tend to drop his head when he's going to block in the run game. My God, if they start calling holding penalties, we can insert this guy at first and goal and we'll end up on our own goal line if they want to call every single holding penalty, because his hands get way out there. He is an absolute technical mess. And I understand that in pass pro is where it shines the worst, but in the run game, my God, that guy has to be completely reconstructed. He can't block in the run game. He couldn't block in the run game in the college game. How the hell is he going to do it in the NFL? I absolutely despise the pick. I think in the fourth round, I would have been fine with taking him, because I'm like, okay, you know, maybe I'm completely wrong and all these other people are right. Maybe the Dane Bruglers and Lance Zierlein's are right, and they're right that he is a top 70, top 60 prospect. So fine. You want to use pick 100 and, you know, 120 on him, cool. But I just don't like the pick. I can't find a redeeming value except, okay, he looks nice. He's big. He has long arms. Have at it, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you. You just, poor guy. I hope he's not listening. Because he actually,
oh my God. You don't have to go see this guy, right? Like, I'm actually going to see this guy in training camp.
I mean, he seems like a genuinely nice human being as well.
Which is
disappointing.
You're your president of Nigeria, by the way.
I know, yeah. His grandfather was.
He plays like it.
His grandfather was the major general and the president of Nigeria in the 60s. Good. So, I mean, I knew it was going to be the pick. We talked about him being the pick, and lo and behold, he was the pick. I have so many kind of points to raise on it. One of which is on whenever he was picked, whenever he ruined my weekend on Friday night. I tweeted about what a horror show pick it was, and I had people who'd literally never seen him play, but who'd been to his college bio page sending me, you know, completely meaningless statistics about how he'd only given up 2 sacks and, you know, and he was rated as this sort of passer and that sort of passer, a pass protector, but clearly had absolutely no knowledge of him being able to actually play the game or having seen a single snap of his at Houston. And I don't mind differences of opinion. That's what makes the draft beautiful, but don't come at me with meaningless statistics when you haven't watched a down of him play. That was frustrating. What else was frustrating? I spoke to an AFC scout and an NFC scout, and I haven't told you this, but one of them had him in the 4th round and one of them had him in the 5th round, which I thought was pretty damning.
About appropriate, I think.
Yeah, I said in the draft, but I wouldn't touch him at least until the 4th round. There are obviously things about his game that are, or about his body, that are intriguing, right? He is built in the lab size, you know, he's 6'7", 333 pounds, ridiculously long arms, completely looks the part. You know, he's not fat. He just looks, you know, so there's clearly a physical ceiling because there's natural God-given attributes that he has. My concern is that he has had 2,950 snaps at left tackle. He's incredibly experienced, and yet his technique is extraordinarily bad. I mean, it's extraordinarily bad. I don't understand. He's not an explosive mover off the ball. He looks lumbering with his kick slide, especially when moving laterally into contact. I think that he has this really weird kick slide as well. He oversets too much. He gives up the inside. He's really susceptible to giving up the inside. But what he's most susceptible to and what he gives up most of all is his chest. I mean, he gives up his chest on almost every single snap, which I find utterly baffling that, you know, he allows men inside him over and that sounds really rude. He allows hands inside him over and over and over again. He drops his head into contact. He sort of stoops into contact in pass pro. He loses his balance. He therefore falls behind in the rep. He is vulnerable to any sort of speed. He's vulnerable to any sort of savvy in terms of being set up. And you can almost watch ends or edge rushers set him up outside, 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 knowing that in a minute they're going to come back at him inside. And he's got absolutely no ability to control what happens when somebody comes across his face. That also sounds really rude. He is, like you said, Alfie, he's a penalty machine. I mean, he is an absolute holder the whole time. His arms are so low coming out of the snap. And then he sort of drops and swings one of his arms and it's so weird. Ollie Connolly, again, posted some pictures earlier, some stills, and there was one still where, I don't know what he was doing with his hands, but he was halfway through a pass pro rep, and it looked like he was about to hug your granny. And that's what he does on every single down. His hand strike is either completely not there, or if it is, it's just so inconsistent. He doesn't know where to strike his hand. He doesn't know how to strike. He has no susceptible to discernible punch whatsoever. I just find, you know, I mean, his hands get chopped away over and over and over again. And like you say, against the as a run defender, you know, he's clearly tough and nasty. Yeah. You know, he's got a nasty edge, nasty demeanor as a run blocker. But again, he dips his head into contact. The hands are all over the place. I just don't get it, and I'll never get it. And I found it, and I know Chris, this is Chris's favorite bit, but I know that we all found it utterly baffling in the press conference afterwards when Greer was like pointing out that he's got so much terrible tape, but if you get through all the terrible tape, there's something in there.
He's great.
Which I just found astonishing.
Yeah. I think the point he was trying to make is that his technique is so bad that if they never call holding penalties, we're never going to allow a sack, yeah. and we're gonna run for 300 yards on everybody.
And then he said, you know,
or they might call us for 15 holding penalties while he's out there.
What it was though is you know, everybody, you're like, hey, look at his, you know, get a load of his highlights though. Let me show you what he can do. Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel spent about 15 minutes saying, yeah, but you really need to see his low lights.
Yeah. I mean, McDaniel looks so underwhelmed at the selection. I thought it was just like, I thought that was really eye-opening. And then this felt completely like, I mean, this totally feels like a Chris Greer, Austin Jackson, I have no idea how to understand offensive line play, and I do it over and over and over again. He loves kids that are dripping with intangibles but have got no actual pure talent. But, you know, you can see there's a physical upside there, which there is for Paul. There absolutely is. You know, you don't have 6'7", 333-pound, 86-inch arm, you know, 86-inch wingspan, 36-plus-inch arms, and not have some sort of intangible. But I just find the pick staggering when you look at who else was on the board. When Mike McDaniel's on the phone to him and he says, you know, you're going to need to go into the lab with Butch Barry for 2 months.
You might even have to move in with him, he said at one point.
I mean, I just find that staggering. And lots of people who also haven't watched the tape saying, oh, but I trust the coaches. Butch Barry's going to be able to do an amazing job. And I think people are really, really overplaying what Butch Barry is doing. I mean, the fact that he was able to turn Austin Jackson in from an embarrassment into somebody that can, you know, pretty much hold up for 2 seconds until Tua can, you know, so that his quarterback doesn't get killed, it is an achievement, sure. But, you know, can we be serious? Like, can we literally be serious? This might be, and we've had some bad picks, but this could be the worst pick of the Chris Greer era. And I don't say that with any joy, frankly. I'm stunned by it, and I would be disappointed if you'd taken him in the fifth round, but to take him in the second round when there were so many good players still on the board who could have contributed immediately, to pick a developmental tackle who has 3,000 career snaps but so many problems, Chris, is was just a massive issue for me.
Aside from that, Mrs. Lincoln, how'd you like the play?
Yeah. Apart from that, I think he's great.
You know, I'm going to try and do the impossible here. You know, because actually I agree with you. I agree with you on, you know, almost everything. And this is a guy that, and it's funny, Chris Greer is excellent at this, because more and more when I do the draft, I'm like, you know, there aren't a lot of bad players. You know, like there's, you're going to find something about pretty much everybody. It might not be your guy, might not be the guy that you would have picked, but, like, you know, you could see it. You could see the good. And so when you ask the question, you know, who do you not want at this pick? And it's hard to come up with a lot of names unless you're just kind of, you know, throwing names out there. And yet we did that in the draft where they took Austin Jackson, and I think Austin Jackson was universally among the three of us like, yeah, just don't take him though. And now the second round, who, you know, day two, who do you not want? Give me one guy you don't want. I think all three of us would have said this.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it's really quite talented for Chris Greer to manage to pick, you know, one out of 50 names like that. That all could have been, you know, all 30 or 40 names could have been the pick at 55. And, you know, oh, that's a reach or something like that. But, you know, wouldn't have been the one guy you didn't want. So I think that's talented. But I'm going to try and take the other side, you know, there, which is impossible. But, you know, I think that they are emboldened by what they did with Austin Jackson. I think that they, you know, sit here and say, you know, hey, there isn't another team in the NFL that would have given, that would have set aside a starting position for Austin Jackson in 2023. You know, without him having to earn it through at least one other very significant player that he would have had to win the job from. And Miami just kind of set aside the right tackle position. And they, I think they're emboldened by that. They're like, hey, we believe in our coaching. We believe in our process. We believe in our, you know, our criteria for what kind of character and worker that a player has to be. You know, Butch, I think Butch Berry even said to you, Alf, you know, when it's a guy like that, you know, yeah, he's going to get a lot of second, third chances and for a reason, you know, for a reason he's got those tangibles. They're operating with this kind of thesis that good character plus good measurables plus good coaching equals bulletproof, you know, and that's it, you know, cause nobody's, we're not going to deny Patrick Paul's character here. Right. I think that he's a great kid. I think he's a hard worker. He wants to be in Miami. He's excited to be in Miami. He's made that clear. It reminds me a little bit of Juwan James and how excited he was to be going to Miami. You know, so good character, obviously the good measurables, obviously the tangible evidence that he can be a good player if he does it right. And then after that, it's just like, you know, a blank, you know, say nothing, and then good coaching. You know, those three things together that they think that's going to work. And I think that that is a little bit misguided. I think that that's a little bit Pollyanna-ish. And so the streets are littered with the bodies of players that, you know, had good work ethic and had good measurables. And you know, I'll be damned if the team that coached them is going to say, well, we had bad coaching. You know, like, yeah, you know, everybody thinks they have good coaching, and it just doesn't work out. So I wonder about the formula. I do. But at the same time, you know, I've been a fan of guys like Morgan Moses, Cornelius Lucas, Duvon Jones in the past. These are big, big players that don't always play the right way. There are positives in the run game, even if they're not ultimately doing it right from a technical standpoint. They are moving walls. And so, you know, just moving in the right direction and having the foot speed that they have and getting them on the hoof makes it a real chore for players to try and run around them. It's very disruptive in the way that the defense likes to flow. And that's, you know, so on that basis, this guy's going to have an NFL career. And if this guy were like, you know, a day three pick, then I would probably be the first one to say, you know, hey, hold on a minute. This guy's going to have an NFL career because look at his size, look at his foot speed. He can be very disruptive in the run game and then in the pass protection, you know, with the natural advantages that he has, that's workable, especially in a system like Miami's that doesn't ask a lot from its tackles in pass protection because Tua gets the ball out in 2 seconds flat, you know? So that's the bright side, really. And when you look at a guy like Brandon Thorne and what he says about Patrick Paul, it's similar to that. It's a good fit with Miami because it's a friendly offensive line scheme, he said, you know? And I think that, you know, yeah, I'm a little bit put off by the media press conference where Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel basically just got up there and said over and over again, yeah, but you got to see the real bad snaps where he's just like his technique is absolute crap. You know, he can still get the job done when his technique is absolute crap. You know, and I'm yeah. Like, yeah, technique is absolute crap every time, and that was against Rice and UTSA. So. You know, I want to like it. I do. I do see an NFL career for the guy. I do. I think, you know, Brandon Thorne would see an NFL career for the guy. I think Greg Cosell would see an NFL career for the guy. So there's something here. But I'll just leave you with one last thing. And I know I'm supposed to be positive about it, but let me read you a list. And these are the left tackles that Mike McDaniel has worked with in the NFL. And they are Dwayne Brown, Trent Williams, Dwayne Brown with the Houston Texans, by the way. Trent Williams with the Washington with Washington, Joe Thomas with the Cleveland Browns, Jake Matthews with the Atlanta Falcons, Joe Staley with the San Francisco 49ers, and then Trent Williams again with the San Francisco 49ers, and then Teron Armstead here in Miami. Where on this list would a Patrick Paul fit?
Nowhere.
Absolutely nowhere. Absolutely nowhere. And that's why, getting back to Simon's point, you know, was this a Chris Greer, you know, pick? Did Chris Greer say, you know, hey, just trust me on this? And did Mike, you know, Mike McDaniel, he wants to be copacetic. He wants to work with everybody. I don't know if he's going to have really the whatever to stand up and be like, you're fucking out of your mind, dude. and so he's going to try and see the best out of it. And it makes you, because I tell you, I don't see Patrick Paul anywhere in that history with Mike McDaniel. Even if you're looking at the right tackles that he's had with Eric Winston, Jamal Brown, Tyler Palumbus, who's now a coach, you know, Mitchell Schwartz. He worked with Mitchell Schwartz, guys like that. I don't see a Mike McGlinchey here either. You know, I think that what you do see is an Austin Jackson. And if you think that you're going to win because in a contract year you got Austin Jackson to finally get serious and remake his body and remake his game, and it worked out last year, and we don't even know if it's going to keep working out in years to come, if that's your thesis behind this pick, then that's a really wrong-headed thesis behind a draft pick for a 55 pick overall, and not a 55-year-old. God,
To be real, if he were 55 years old, that's one hell of an impressive 55-year-old.
You know, that's a fair point.
Look, I like following, and we're gonna go to break here, but I like following Lance Zierlein's comparables, and I made notes of these things, okay? Because you're not gonna get this past me, Lance. I know when you change these things. By the way, he likes Patrick Paul. He started off with Abraham Lucas as his comparable. I was like, when I saw that, I was like, what? And I'm like, okay, no, he's gonna eventually change this, because he does change it every once in a while. He quietly, stealthily changed it 2 weeks ago to Nicholas Petit-Ferrer.
Well, and
with that, I leave you with that, and we will go to break. And when we come back, we'll come back with the much more sunny day three. But first, these words.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Are you a South Florida property owner with an insurance claim? Are you dealing with water, mold, or fire damage to your home or business? Are you having trouble locating a 5-star rated general contractor that is fully licensed, certified, and insured? If the answer is yes, then Water Cleanup of Florida is here for you 24 hours a day. With over 60 years of combined experience, Michael, Robert, Jorge, and their team is prepared to handle any size property damage disaster. When an unexpected damage occurs to your home or business, you need specialized, fast, and reliable services. Water Cleanup of Florida understands the impact and stress an unexpected disaster may cause. Their objective is to make the cleanup and insurance claim process painless and hassle-free. Water Cleanup of Florida is also a licensed general contractor, so they provide the A to Z service, one-stop shopping that busy homeowners and business owners require. Water Cleanup of Florida is now an authorized dealer of Eurocraft cabinets, so premier kitchen, bath, and laundry cabinetry, countertops, and other accessories are available for your viewing at their showroom in Boca Raton. Or do you prefer to shop from your home or office? Then Water Cleanup will send you one of our design specialists to you with samples and products that fit your style and budget. Call Michael anytime on his personal cell phone if you have any questions at 954-579-0356. That's 954-579-0356. Or visit their website at WCUFL.com. You can follow them on Facebook and Instagram. And please check out their more than 80 five-star reviews on Google and Facebook. Water Cleanup of Florida. If you have the schmutz, they have the guts.
I'm Jalen Phillips, and you're listening to 3 Yards Per Carry.
And we're back. So the Dolphins trade into the fourth round. They trade a 2025 third-round pick to get 120 overall. And I think that was great work because they traded for a running back. And if you followed what happened afterwards, running back went at 125, 127, 128, 129, and 134. So they got the pick of the litter, really, in the fourth round. They get Jalen Wright. Absolutely love the pick. Hard to see a guy who presses the hole and falls into the void for more yardage better than Jalen Wright. And then when he gets into that void, he just extends his stride, and he could be gone with his 4.38 speed. Absolutely love the pick. I think he'll play a lot. Your thoughts, Simon?
Yeah, I love him. I loved him when I first started doing the draft book and started watching him in any sort of detail. He's my number two back. I think he is just, he's got so much talent. He is dynamic. He's got long speed, 6.7 yards per carry in the SEC over the last two seasons. Absolute home run hitter. Lightly used wheels. He's strong. He's balanced. State champion in the 55 meters. And he's extremely elusive. Great hands. And he's really good in pass protection as well. I just thought it was an absolute home run hit. He had some fumbling issues in the past. He had four fumbles in 2022, but only one last year. So it feels like he's improved in that area. My comp for him was Raheem Mostert. I just thought it was an absolutely rock solid day two pick. And we got him in the fourth round, which is unbelievable value. And somebody was tweeting me a few months ago when we said on the pod that Miami didn't need running backs. And I don't think we needed running backs, obviously. At some point, value just outweighs everything else. And that's what happened here with Jalen Wright. I thought it was just such an unbelievable value pick. And I think it was, you know, day three generally, apart from the Patrick Morris pick, I thought day three was an absolute grand slam. And it started off in a great way, Chris, with a home run hit and running back.
Simon, let me just ask you this quick question. If Jalen Wright, finish the sentence. If Jalen Wright was the Dolphins pick at number 55 overall, blank.
I'd be ecstatic.
There you go. I mean, yeah. So.
Yeah, what if Patrick Paul was the pick that you traded up for in the fourth round?
Well,
if you flip the two picks, though, it's a great point. Round pick. Yeah. If you flip the two picks, I feel significantly better about the draft than I do.
Right. I mean, and so, you know, maybe that makes us feel a little bit better. We're not going to like every pick. If we told you that we liked every pick, then you could probably just take everything that we say with a grain of salt, you know, because that's not real evaluation. And there's nothing worse than an evaluator that just kind of goes with the flow. So, you know, on the Patrick, and that still talking on the Patrick Paul pick, but this was, to me, a home run. I considered him. It's not necessarily the best running back in the class. It's just that for Miami, he was the best running back in the class. And I think that yes, there's an obvious speed thing that Miami is working with. I think that getting him in the fourth round, trading away one of the three third rounders that we're going to have next year, essentially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's just trading one of those guys for probably the best Miami running back in the class in the fourth round. I think that's a home run. And yes, I don't believe Miami needed this guy. I wouldn't get excited, you know, just because we needed him. We needed an offensive tackle. we weren't excited with the pick. You know, I think that this was a guy that Miami didn't necessarily need.
Although I will remind Dolphin fans, they lined up against Baltimore and Buffalo with one healthy running back in those two games.
Yeah. And that's the thing. Running backs get hurt. They go in and out of the lineup. Mike McDaniel believes in having you know, a full complement of backs that he can throw at a team with all their different strengths and weaknesses, because his system is one of the last standing true run pass conflict based systems in the NFL. It really is. You know, I think other teams run the ball and other teams, you know, use play action and such, but I don't think they have such a cohesive run pass conflict oriented system as the one that Miami runs. So this is as much about opening up the pass as it is the run. So I think that the interesting parts about taking a Jalen Wright is because this isn't really in his history. It's not really in his history to be split out, you know, say in the slot or out wide, and used like a receiver. I mean, he's done it some, but it's like, you know, it's a handful of times. I think that this may give you some interesting possibilities with Achan, because he was split out wide. He was out. He lined up out of the backfield on a full third of his snaps for the Dolphins last year. And that is twice the rate as guys like Raheem Mostert or Jeff Wilson. Not twice the rate of Chris Brooks, who didn't play that much last year, but that's because Chris Brooks was used as like a blocker. Like his snaps outside of the backfield were overwhelmingly as a run blocker. So almost like a fullback, pseudo fullback kind of thing. That's not what we're talking about. Achan, since he's been drafted, I have been sort of on the bandwagon. It's a lonesome bandwagon, but it's a bandwagon for moving him to wide receiver to maximize his potential as a playmaker, while simultaneously giving him the most longevity as a player. We saw how banged up he was last year as a running back. And I think that this gives Miami some interesting options that way. I think I'm not going to say they're going to make some sort of wholesale change. I think it just gives them the opportunity to continue pursuing what they've already been pursuing with Achan, lining up outside of the backfield, lining up like a wide receiver in the slot, even on out wide, and being used that way. And Jalen Wright will help you just be able to keep the offense rolling, keep the offense being able to throw different problems at the defense. And for that, this was an outstanding pick. This was perfect. It was everything the draft should be for us, you know, draft Knicks that have been following it for, you know, 20 plus years. I think that's a really, really great pick for Miami.
Yeah, he's going to help. And I think he'll play. If the last 2 years have been any indication, he's going to get on the field and he's going to make an impact. Then round five, pick 158, they take Muhammad Kamara, edge player from Colorado State. Absolutely love the pick. I saw where one of the beat writers, Alan Poupart, was comparing him in demeanor and as a player to Brian Cox. He is nowhere near what Brian Cox was coming out of Northern Illinois. Brian Cox wasn't as good an athlete as Mo Kamara is. Mo Kamara's problem is that he's short. He's 6'1". If he were 6'4", I think he would have gone day two, because he runs under 4'6". He's fast. Runs 4.57. He's relentless. Has heavy hands. He's mean spirited on the field. Likes to talk. Although when asked about his trash talking, he says that he's usually pretty quiet during the game. That he likes to get all his talking in before the game or pre snap, but that he goes quiet because he's so focused. If you watch him play, you know, this is a guy, he just keeps coming. He's relentless over and over. He keeps coming back at you and at you. He's relentless. I think somebody wrote in one of their draft books, like, he comes off the edge almost like he's on fire, a bit maniacal, with like no plan, just get to the quarterback. Some of his tape looks that way. Against the run, like I said, he's heavy handed. He has good leverage because he's shorter. I think he's also going to make a big impression. And I think the best thing that was said all the weekend by the beat writers were, here's your Andrew Van Ginkel replacement. And yeah, he's not Andrew Van Ginkel in dimension, but in impact, I think he very well might be. I absolutely love this pick. He was my sixth edge after the top four and Braylon Trice. I absolutely love the pick. And at 158, it's an absolute steal, Simon.
Yeah, I mean, 2023 Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year, 13 sacks, trash-talking team leader. Reminds me of Jerry Hughes. Great get-off, explosive get-off. Never stops attacking the pocket. I think he, you know, when that speed is nullified, he turns it into power. He does it really well. I think, like you say, he plays with great leverage. He can get under the pads of a lineman. He can duck under. He's bendy. He's got a great drive step at the top of his rush. He's got good flex in his ankles. I think he's strong against the run despite his size. He doesn't get kind of nullified. He doesn't get overwhelmed. I think he actually does have a really good plan as a rusher. And I think he sets up tackles. He's got a decent array of weapons that he can fall back on. He's got counters. And he's shown the ability to win from inside out. You know, he's rushed on the inside. He's rushed at that tiger position. He can play a little bit out of control at times, but like I said, he does remind me of a smaller Jerry Hughes, Chris. And I think, you know, that pass rushing juice, despite the size, 6'1", that pass rushing juice to me should have seen him go and, you know, in day two. And I was really surprised. Not only did he fall to day three, but to get him in day five, in round five, was an absolute home run hit for the Dolphins. And coming straight off the back of Jalen Wright, that was absolutely, you know, home run hit for me. And I think, you know, the kid we're going to talk about next was exactly the same. I think the Dolphins had an amazing 3-round run with the guys that they picked, and this guy in the middle was just a sensational value pick.
Yeah, I think so. We just got, if we talk about Chop Robinson, and the thing that a lot of people don't like is the production, obviously, the counter that Chris Greer and many others, and, you know, myself included, would give is, you know, it's not about the sack production, it's about the traits. Well, the Dolphins kind of stood up and said, well, okay, how about both, and we'll find out. You know, because Chop Robinson may not have the sack production, but Mo Kamara does. And Mo Kamara, I think, the way I view him, and not everybody's going to see it the same way, but the way I view him is almost like a Yannick Ngakoue, kind of like a classic fifth rusher, you know. I see him as that outside rushing mold. He is a specialist in that outside rush. And it's not because he has the explosiveness of a Chop Robinson, who's, I think his first step is really just rather insane. It's because he is elite at bending at the top of his arc. And he does have that elite bend, elite lean, And it's better than his overall explosiveness, but it's very productive. It works out. I think he's a physically tough player. He is a physically strong player, and he plays with the right mentality. But I do see him, like, what kind of player is he going to be? He's the guy that I've heard other general managers kind of refer to as your fifth rusher. He's a very classic, I think, fifth rusher, which is that sort of outside guy, the swooper, I've heard them called, you know, that kind of player. And I think that he does have a future in Miami, but this was also a need. There's a reason that, and it wasn't just pure value, I think, that as all indications were that Mike McDaniel was already pestering Chris Greer about Malik Washington with this pick. And Chris Greer was like, hey, hold on, I've got to do this first. And there's a reason, and that's that if Jalen Phillips and Bradley Chubb are both starting the year on reserve list, which we don't know. Don't ask us, we don't know. Then if they're starting the year on reserve list in week one, before this draft weekend, the only guy we had was Shaq Barrett, and that's not good enough. You know? So then, okay, now you've added Chop Robinson. So now you have Shaq Barrett and Chop Robinson. That's great, except Baltimore utilized a 3-man primary rotation on the edge, ideally a 4-man with some scraps for a fourth rusher. And so just having Shaq Barrett and Chop Robinson was not good enough. They needed somebody else. And so this is where Muhammad Kamara comes in. Now it doesn't matter if Bradley Chubb and Jalen Phillips are on a reserve list for a couple of weeks to start the year out. They have the ability to get by. They have the ability to use Shaq Barrett and Chop Robinson and Mo Kamara, all three of them in different ways, and in order to have a cohesive defense that that is able to attack the quarterback in the way that they want to attack the quarterback. So I think they're all good at different things, and they're all gonna play really well. And if we get the good news, if we get good news on Jalen Phillips, or we get good news on Bradley Chubb for a week one debut, then all the better, you know, all the better. And that's where Mo Kamara, I think, comes in as he can be your fifth rusher, your fifth edge rusher, or your outside guy. And so that's kind of how I see him. And I think it was a good value pick for the Dolphins. So, you know, just overall, that's a really strong selection.
Yeah, I absolutely fell in love when I saw him play in the second week of the season against Colorado, where he essentially declared war on Deion Sanders, had two sacks, two tackles for losses, and one 15-yard penalty as he tried to essentially bury Shedeur Sanders under the turf. I absolutely love the pick. I think he'll make an impact. Moving on, round six, pick 184, Malik Washington. Now, this is a guy that it's almost universal, from the Dane Brugglers to the Lance Zierlein's, to I believe even our own Simon Clancy in his draft book kind of had him classified there. Everybody pretty much thought he was going to be a late day two pick. I absolutely love him. He plays with a maturity. He talks with a maturity. This is the guy that finished his degree at Northwestern and then decided, you know what? I got to go shine. I got to let my football shine. So I'm going to go to Virginia here. Okay. He's a Steve Smith man crush, which is a good thing to be if you've been following Steve Smith Senior's draft picks the last few years at wide receiver. I absolutely love the pick. Top three slot player in this draft, maybe. I absolutely love him. Simon, I think he's going to make an impact if he gets the snaps.
Yeah, which he should do, which he will do, I think, because he's so mature. He's got a real understanding of offense. You go back and when he was in high school, you look at who he was recruited by, you know, Michigan, Tennessee, Michigan State. These were like, you know, he chose Northwestern over those two. We, you know, this is Power Five conferences. This is SEC football. This is, you know, the Big Ten, et cetera, et cetera. You look at what he's done. Only the sixth receiver in ACC history to have 100 or more receptions in a season. He's the all-time single-season reception record holder in the ACC, a team captain. He's bright. He's academic all-conference 4 years in a row. He was a state champion in the 4x100-meter relay. I thought he was the best player by miles at the East-West Shrine Bowl, and scouts I spoke to there just said he just stood out both on and off the field. I think, you know, you look at what he brings to the table. You know, he's got arguably the best hands in the draft, or, you know, top three, top four hands in the draft. But at 5'8", 192, you worry about the size, and yet he's strong. He's got great play strength. He's great after the catch. He's one of the best yak threats after the catch. He's obviously going to be a true slot guy. But when you watch the film, he just, you know, he wins in multiple contested catch situations. You know, 34 in his career, 9 last year, was third in the nation with 711 yards after the catch. 49.2% of his career receiving yards have come after the catch. He's built like a running back, but he's explosive, he's twitchy, he's polished, he's a great route runner, he's sudden. You look at how he runs his routes, he understands tempo and pacing in his routes, which I think is really, you know, advanced for a receiver coming out of college, especially in the modern game. He's sudden at the top of the stem. He can conflict corners in terms of how he does what he does and how twitched up he is. And I love the physicality, you know, 4 drops in the last 3 seasons in terms of hands, ball tracking. Yep, tick, can absolutely do that. To me, just an absolutely perfect slot weapon. And I think, you know, the videos of Mike McDaniel punching the air in the draft room when he knew that we landed him tell you everything you need to know. I think he'll be a big contributor from the slot. early on, and he could easily develop into a Tyler Lockett type player for the Dolphins, and you know, could catch a significant amount of passes. And if he can stay healthy, which he has done, he's only missed four games in 2020. If he can stay healthy, I think he could put up some big, big catch numbers.
Do you know who they traded this pick? What player they traded this pick for, Simon?
No, I don't.
Dan Feeney.
There you go.
Last year, Chris.
Well, that's interesting, because at the time that they traded Dan Feeney, we were like, yeah, but who's your backup center? How does this make sense? Like, you know,
well, Malik Washington now is your backup center, you say?
Well, now Malik Washington is your backup center. So, so that makes sense. I look at him as a slot player. I really liked watching him play at Virginia, but I do think that there were limitations. I don't know that he is a three position player at the receiver position, you know, and I certainly don't think that he's going to back up at three positions as a rookie, especially as a rookie sixth rounder. I think that there is a little bit of reality check with him in terms of, you know, if you watch him, say, against for most of the UNC game, you'd say, well, you know, this doesn't look like an unstoppable player by any means. I think that he is a third down conversion guy. He's a guy that you can trust. I think he's very much going to compete with Braxton Berrios for a roster spot. And Braxton Berrios has the returns ability that he can add on, but also there are other return men on the roster that if Malik Washington is just a better receiver, then Braxton Berrios, you know, might not be here. And so I think that those two are going to fight for slot positioning, as particularly as Malik Washington is a rookie. I think that both players are actually pretty good at getting open on third down and converting the chains when targeted. Malik Washington was very dominant that way this year with Virginia. I think he was targeted on third, fourth down something like 38 times. And I think he converted almost 60% of those, you know, of those targets. So I think that he's an exciting player. I think he's an exciting value to get in the sixth round. I would temper expectations for his rookie year by saying that, you know, is he the reason that you're not going to go sign Odell Beckham Jr., for example? No, because Odell Beckham Jr. could back up and fill in at all three positions. For the wide receivers. And I don't think Malik Washington does that. I think that he kind of is competing at one position, and it could be a productive position for him if he wins that job and he gets on the field. I think his toughness is really the thing that attracts Miami here. I mean, obviously he has good hands and he runs really, really good, tricky routes, but it's just that toughness, because a lot of times we're looking at slot receivers and we're like, we kind of almost have slot as this catch-all for guys that aren't physical enough, you know, that aren't big enough. It's like, well, if he's not big enough, he's not physical enough. Oh yeah, but he's not fast enough. You know, he's not purely vertical like Jalen Waddle. I think Greg Cosell kind of drew a distinction between the two in his bottom line about Malik Washington. He's not Jalen Waddle. But, you know, if he's not fast enough and he's not big enough, then, oh, he's a slot guy. Well, the problem with that is that slot is asked to do some real dirty work in the NFL. They're asked to get, you know, fairly tight to the formation at times. And they're asked to do some real dirty work as a blocker. They're asked to do some dirty work as a player that is physical running his routes sometimes. And obviously going over the middle, you got to be able to absorb a hit. This is a guy that actually does work that way. Like, he is, yes, he's probably going to work in the slot, because I'm not sure that he works on the outside, and I'm not sure that he works vertically as well, but he works in the slot in all the ways that you want the slot to work, because he is strong, he is tough. And so it's that toughness that would probably be that toughness, and probably if you have to ask Mike McDaniel, what are the two things you appreciate most about Malik Washington, it might be toughness and his professional comportment. you know, demeanor. And those are the things that will avail him and let him have a pretty long NFL career. So good pick in the sixth round.
All right, moving on. And I don't think we're going to spend too much time on him, but this is obviously a staff and scouting staff pick at 198, round six. Patrick Morris, a safety from California. I did no work on him. I think you did some, Simon. Your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I don't love the pick. I didn't love him on tape, I've got to say. He's a former running back, so he's got good feet. He's competitive. He's urgent. He can find the football. He's well put together. He's played single high. He's played split safety. He's been part of a three-man unit, so he has some versatility. As I said, he can man match out the slot pretty well. He runs the ball well, like I said. I had a bit of... He's an indifferent tackler, I think. He's a watcher as much as anything in terms of, you know, his involvement in those sorts of things. You know, he had one pick last year. Bo Nix as his lone interception, but he's well experienced. He's a 40-game starter. You know, so I suspect he provides some special teams cover and some kind of cover on the back end as a fourth, fifth safety in the mix. And like you say, he was clearly well liked by some staffers and by scouts. And, you know, he almost felt like a sort of a, you know, we'll give one back to the scouts kind of pick that Chris Greer had. It was my one down point, I think, on the final day in terms of who we selected. And, you know, I was just trying to look up here who else was still on the board, but I kind of, you know, I thought it was fairly meh on tape, and I wasn't, you know, thrilled with the pick. But, you know, we'll see what happens, Chris. I mean, you know, it's it's the sixth round. You know, you're not finding too many Tom Brady's there. Oh, wait a minute, maybe you are. But you know what I mean. You know what I mean.
Yeah. When I looked at him, the thing that actually two things jumped out about him, just from a profiling standpoint. Is one, I thought he did actually have, and I went back and I had to look and see what he ran, and that's when I discovered, well, he didn't run. He pulled a hammy at his pro day, so he doesn't have a 40 time on file or anything like that. But I only went to look because when I watched him on tape, he seemed like he had plus range to me. You know, I think of him a little bit like a name to reach back from history is Chris Clemens, who we had a long time ago. You know, he could run. He had range. He wasn't necessarily an exciting safety, a ball hawk. But, you know, his range would help you limit mistakes a little bit. He was not a killer as a tackler by any means, but he could rack up tackles. I think that's Patrick McMorris. In a nutshell, he is a guy, you know, for not being a killer as a tackle, the guy has 240 tackles over the last 3 years, right? That's a lot, right? And I think that, I mean, he has forced some fumbles over that period of time as well. You'd have to go back a pretty long way to his time at San Diego State to try and see a ball hawk there, you know, and say, well, you know, he's going to make plays on the ball. I'm not sure that is what he is, but we'll see. But the two things that stood out to me is plus range. And then the other one is variability in the way that he's used. I mean, as you said, Simon, you named all the different ways that he's been used. He's played a lot of slot snaps. You know, he's played a lot of snaps of free safety, and he's played almost an equal number of snaps in the box, even a little bit wide at corner sometimes. So I think that this is a player that has versatility and plus range, and is just they're hoping to make him an all around good, solid football player. Who can contribute at the safety position for the Dolphins and probably special teams. I mean, we know that that's a big deal for a guy like him. No, I do not believe that this was, for example, like a Danny Crossman pick. I don't think that necessarily Danny Crossman was sitting there pounding the table saying, get me this guy. But he is going to play special teams, and I think that he could – play them pretty well based on how he played them at Cal. So
I think
overall.
Oh, sorry.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, for me, the disappointment was, you know, when you have, you know, a kind of Christian Boyd or a Jaden Cremady on the board, you had a, you know, a Nathaniel Watson, a Christian Mahogany was still on the board, you know, didn't go for sort of 10 more picks, a Bo Limmer, you know, that to me kind of, you know, even safety-wise, like, yeah, I like Trey Taylor, who won the Thorpe Award significantly better. Brendan Wright, Jerry Rice's kid, was still on the board. You had guys like MJ Devonshire, the Pittsburgh corner, Jaheim Bell, obviously, who we all really liked, Matt Lee, the Miami center. To me, that just felt like a bit of a, you know, I mean, that could have been an absolutely home run day three if they picked guys we liked,
right,
rather than guys they liked.
But do you remember before the draft when Chris Greer was in press conference and he said that, you know, the first couple of rounds they always go with the best player available, and then in day three, in some of the latter stages, they might be targeting a certain role, a certain position, and that's this.
Yeah, 100%, 100%, and you know, they clearly liked him. That there was a lot, you know, we talked about the 40 time. You know, he didn't have one, but his brother's a track star, so I suspect he runs fairly well, runs pretty quickly, and I suspect he, you know, if he can improve the tackling, I think he'll go and be a core special teamer, and that's important.
All right, moving on, the seventh round, pick 241. This one's interesting. Taj Washington, he has good tape, meaning he's very, very productive. I understand some people on Twitter just read his drop stats and say, oh my god, he drops the ball a lot. Well, his most productive season was last season, and he's had 40 starts, and last season he had 1,000 yards and he had one confirmed drop. He had 14 for his 5-year career, although I believe, and yep, 5-year career. So he's a willing blocker, good kick returner, good punt returner. You guys saw him play a lot. He played with Caleb Williams, played at USC. Good player. He might be up against it on this roster, but he could shine enough, and I already project him as a practice squad player, because I think this Braylon Sanders experiment has gone on for way too long. Okay. So I think this is a pretty good practice squad guy. And man, you can't do much better in the seventh round, Simon.
Yeah, agreed. And again, you know, you look at the same sort of profile, team captain, a guy that, you know, his teammates absolutely go to battle for in terms of, you know, the sort of ride or die mentality of, you know, just being the head of the locker room, you know, in terms of what he was at both at Memphis and at USC. Chef Taj, as he's known, you know, he's a great cook. He's got his own YouTube channel, cooking YouTube channel, which I watched pre-draft. What I liked about him on tape was that when he played with a guy like Caleb Williams, he had an astonishingly good job of just coming back to the ball and finding the dead areas and zones. And he was brilliant on, you know, he gets a lot of free releases on tape, but and ran a lot of similar routes, you know, screens and bubbles and curls and out and ups, but he's a smooth mover. I think he can struggle a little bit against press coverage and he has bigger corners, but you know, when he got those clean releases, he was quick and he's elusive and he's got some, you know, some short area quickness and some burst and some acceleration. But he had really good hands. And I think, you know, second in the nation in contested catch win rate behind Roma Dunze. You know, he can get open down the field as well and make yak. He was fifth in the nation for receiving yards on targets of 20 plus yards behind only Dunze, Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers and Brian Thomas, you know, so he's smart. And I called him on the show and in the draft book a sort of budget Amon-Ra St. Brown, which was a little bit unfair in part because of how physical St. Brown is. But there were some similarities in what they do in terms of, you know, you go back and look at Amon-Ra's tape coming out and it's similar to what Washington did. And, you know, Brendan Rice had the body, but Washington had the body of work. And, you know, somebody that's smart and tough and instinctive and athletic and has great hands and is available in the seventh round, and you pick him and you can bring him into an offense like this, I think, you know, he should be an early contributor on special teams and he's an intriguing slot option.
Yes.
I think what stood out to me the most when I was watching him was actually he's a very tricky player getting open against man coverage. I agree with you 100% on you know, press and getting free access and bigger profiled coverage guys. Those can give him a little bit of trouble. So, you know, yes, this is a player who is what he's just under 5'10" and 174 pounds. You know that you're going to want to scheme him free access. That's, you know, it's just what it's not a weakness anymore. It's just what he is, right?
He's open a lot as well, doesn't he?
Yeah. But if you scheme him that free access, this guy gets open a lot. And this guy is very tricky to cover in man coverage. And you know, and working with Caleb Williams is a little bit of a double-edged sword too sometimes, because Caleb Williams is going to buy you a lot of production on extra time. But also there's some sort of on time, you know, maximum separation stuff that you weren't always getting with Caleb Williams. Because, you know, if he goes into playground mode sometimes. So I think that the thing that stood out to me is yes, he's good against man coverage. He's got the production to back it up. He's one of literally the most productive and efficient receivers out there in this draft class against man coverage. And whenever I watched him play, the guy's just getting open. The guy's just getting open and making plays and catching the ball. So I actually kind of, you know, as a compare contrast with Malik Washington, the other Washington, it's an interesting conundrum because I set it up. I said that, you know, usually with a guy that's too small or not fast enough, you're like, oh, well, you know, he'll just be in the slot. Well, that's Taj Washington. Right. That also is Malik Washington, but you're asking those slot players to do some dirty work that, you know, those guys that just, you know, you're moving to the slot because he can't be on the outside. Those guys aren't always prepared to do that. And that's Taj Washington, unfortunately. So I don't know that he's got the strength and toughness to do the dirty work to be a sustainable slot player for the Dolphins over the long haul. I'm still eyes on Malik Washington for that, but I wouldn't be surprised if right away in training camp and preseason and such, you're looking at it and you're like, gosh, you know, this Taj Washington's getting open a little bit more than Malik Washington is. And that's, I think, what makes it interesting as sort of Malik Washington being a guy that obviously Mike McDaniel had been pestering Chris Greer about for a few rounds. Probably with the Mo Kamara pick, starting with the Mo Kamara pick, versus Taj Washington, the very last pick of theirs in the draft, and being probably a scout, you know, a scout pounded the table for him, or maybe a coach pounded the table for him, or somebody like that pounded the table and said, this guy, you're not going to regret it. So, and actually, one more thing I would find interesting is that he is a captain, that he is well-loved, that he is a leader in the locker room is very interesting because he transferred because a coach called him selfish out of Memphis. And I think he did it in front of the team too. And he ended up transferring in the wake of that. I don't know if you could say it was specifically because of that one incident, but so, you know, I think that he is an interesting player. Wouldn't be surprised if even some of the early returns, you're like, hey, is Taj the better Washington? But I think over the long haul, it's going to be Malik. But he's going to be a good guy to keep around on the practice squad, which is probably where they have him targeted.
All right. And that'll be it. The clock is ticking, by the way. Because I believe we have only two more shows before our well-deserved hiatus of every single season. But we're trying to see. Hopefully the Dolphins make some news here in a week, okay? Maybe with a contract signing. Maybe with a free agent signing. But we will talk to you again next week.
Thanks for listening to 3 Yards Per Carry. You can subscribe via iTunes, on Podbean, or your usual podcast provider.
Save big on your Memorial Day barbecue, all in the Kroger app. Get 3-pound rolls of juicy 80% lean ground beef for $3.49 a pound with a digital coupon. Then get select varieties of flavorful Powerade, Body Armor Super Drink, or Arizona tea for 77 cents each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.